Fred, just picture this. I'm on the KR, the King's Road, doing a bit of high-end shopping, and I bump into Liv Bentley from Made in Chelsea. She doesn't know who I am. I say, well, I've actually got 43,000 followers on Instagram. Do you not know me from the song More Lash, 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 More Lash. She takes great offense by that song and decides to walk away straight away and says, I don't want anything to do with you. And I say, fair enough. That's totally understandable. But luckily, as I turn around, I bump into Ed Jackson, ex-professional rugby player, now Channel 4 presenter. And I say, Ed, you must know the song. More Lash, More Lash, More Lash, More Lash. More Lash, More Lash, More Lash, More Lash, More Lash, More Lash, More Lash. More Lash. He looks me in the eyes and says, Archie, of course I know that song. I'm a big fan of the podcast. Also, you're notorious in the rugby world. I said, of course I am, Jacko. Do you fancy going for a pint? He says, only if we can sing this song with everyone in the pub. And I go, let's get there. And we start singing. More Lash, More Lash, More Lash, More Lash. More Lash, More Lash. More Lash, More Lash, More Lash, More Lash. More Lash. Ballers. And the whole pub goes crazy. They're just happy to see two rugby legends. And actually, it works out that me and Ed have way more better banter.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 7 of the Rigbiz podcast as we edge ever closer to that Kilimanjaro height of gaining the Christmas number one. I am joined by a man not necessarily musically talented, but talented in many other mediums.
Oh, well, Mr. I think you can call me Santa Claus because what? I am delivering a gift to Clapham. Okay. I am taking us to number one. The music video is done, the single is done, and next week we pre-release the Christmas single and we take control of the charts.
Take back control. You sounded like Nigel Farage there, Archie. I mean,
he's one of my heroes.
Okay, well, fair play. Each to their own. But yeah, guys.
Although he's got a terrible chassis.
He does have a badge, yes. Well, guys, next week you can pre-buy the single, so please make sure you look out for the sort of further announcements.
Yeah, guys, don't be dicks. Just don't be dicks and don't buy it. I mean, if you can't afford a quid, then you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. In fact, if you can't afford a quid and you follow me on Instagram, de-follow me, mate, because if you can't afford a quid, then what are you doing listening to this pod? This pod's not for you.
So what?
Am I right?
You are right. So you're saying instead of buying one track, buy 10, buy 20.
But
Show off how much money you've got by buying as many tracks.
I've got a few friends who said they're going to put a hundy down on the track.
A hundy?
Yeah, a hundy.
Jesus Christ, that would be impressive. And I'm sure we're going to give like back...
I'm buying a shed load.
How many?
Well, don't you worry, a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
But you haven't had...
My Q4 bonus is basically going on buying the singles.
All right, so about 100.
Well, no, way more than that, mate.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Q4's been good for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what else has been good is the fact that we are not one, not two, but every time we do a podcast, another incredible announcement comes out about a vaccine. Now the Oxford vaccine could be up to 90% effective.
Yeah, also big announcement, which will probably be coming in the news soon. AC Limited, we have actually created a vaccine as well, which is coming out.
You've created a vaccine?
Yeah, I've been working with a couple of guys I went to school with.
Scientists or...?
No, they were bloody good at biology, though. One of the guys got an A-star. We're bringing out a vaccine. But the best thing about our vaccine is it has got a 95% success rate. But also, it's got protein in it, so it will help you get stronger. Mate, and bigger.
Are you sure that? Like, sound like Putin or something.
No. It will be coming out next week, and we're really confident. Yeah,
that quickly.
Yeah, we're in production lines.
Are you sure you just haven't sort of stolen the supplies of the Oxford?
No. We've got people making it in Cambodia, and we're going to get it shipped here, and it's going to be a real success. We're hoping, fingers crossed, that we think it will also add a tan to you as well. Not only will you be COVID free, you'll be stacked and with a tan.
God, that is ridiculous. But I mean, you know, if it works, you know, Yeah, I'm guessing you're going to be the first person to take it.
I've taken it.
You've already taken it?
Yeah. Can you not notice how good I look?
Well, you seem a bit sniffly, so I'm a bit worried.
No. It's just because I was running on the common today, and I think I ran past someone, and they might have given me a common cold.
But anyway, just quickly, you know, obviously some great rug on Amazon Prime, essentially.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I was in the advert.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Obviously, the highlight, probably the England-Ireland game, the Johnny Mayer.
You know, I don't know if that's come to... in my negotiation, I asked for shares in Amazon.
I'm not sure you're going to get them, mate.
Yeah, they haven't come back to me, but I got my PA, to go back to them and say, waive the fee.
Okay.
Just give me shares. Or get me a Zoom with Jeff.
Not sure either of those things are going to happen.
But yeah, the Ruggers was great. You know,
Johnny
May, yeah. For a guy that has the body of Jamie Lang, he's doing bloody well. But he was rapido.
Also, the underlying theme throughout the day was father versus son, which obviously is quite... a precious subject with you, you know.
Yeah.
Farrell versus Farrell.
Yeah. Yeah, because my relationship with my dad is so good, that would never be the case. We'd always be together. Mm. And that's why, you know, he's the owner of the Crab and Falcons, and that's why I'm his 10.
Right.
And that's, you know, our bond is greater than anything.
But at least
you know,
they get to see each other after the game.
Yeah, and I'm you know, definitely when lockdown finishes, I'm hoping that I'll see Alistair. And I think he will be impressed with the results this vaccine has given me. I mean, I'm going to look in great shape.
One thing you will be impressed by, because I know you hate it and detest it so much, the England Umbro rugby kit. The guys from Brett's Club have bought out an England rugby jersey.
Have they?
Which is just casual. It's just casual. It looks great. You can wear it to the rugger and then you can wear it on a date.
Have they sent us any?
I think they're sending us some.
Right. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, I'll be the judge when I see it, Freddie.
They bought one out for every single nation playing rugby. So, guys, you know...
even Wales?
Yep.
Ooh.
So, we're going to put it in the box below. And if you want a slightly more casual, high-end look, you know, because no one wants to be wearing Umbro on their chest when they're going out towards the rugger.
No one wants to be wearing Umbro full stop.
Okay, no one wants to be wearing Umbro full stop. But if you guys...
Just tell me one good lad that wears Umbro.
I can't think of one.
Okay, exactly. Point taken.
But if you guys want to look smart and savvy, then get in the little box below and check out the jerseys Rex Club are bringing out, because they're sophisticated. They're like you, Archie. They're well-groomed, they're manicured, and they're ready to make an impact. Archie, how excited
Freddie.
Are you, sir, to sit down with the randiest lady in the world, Mrs. Liv Bentley?
Yeah,
she's got it all.
It's good to get a little cheeker on here and have some chanter with her.
Are you still watching Made in Chelsea as much as you were, you know, pre-Mr. Jamie Lang? Or?
I don't really have time for Made in Chelsea, to be honest. And after Langers came on and his chat was below average, listening back to it, you know, the guy needs to go back to the drawing board. Yes, he's getting tens on the dance floor, but if he was in Strictly Come Chat... he'd be getting a 2 from me at most.
Okay, well, that's pretty brutal.
It really annoys me how skinny stacked he is.
Yeah, well, yeah. Mate, he's doing well, I think. I quite enjoy watching him in my box on a Saturday evening. At least he's making it.
Yeah, I'm making it as well.
Yeah, but not in the same way. He's on the biggest show on TV.
Okay, but I'm making one of the most incredible vaccines to come out, and that will make me millions, and then I'll use that millions to self-promote myself. Okay. And I'm going to get a Christmas number one.
So you're going to spend it all on sort of Instagram-targeted adverts to make you even bigger?
Maybe. If I've got that money, why not?
Okay. And what is it about Liv Bentley which sort of excites you, makes you want to sort of pursue more with her?
I think, you know, she's obviously from good stock, which first and foremost is a positive. But also, you know, she looks naughty. I've had a look on Google at some of her images, and I looked at her Instagram, and it is, it's stupendous.
Okay. Well, we're going to be able to chew the fat with her, and I'm sure she's going to provide us with lots of entertainment.
I hear she's got some fairly good pitter-patter.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of the show, and she's always the one who sort of stands up tall and really takes it to people, so I am looking forward to
What I've heard is she looked after herself a little bit better in the gym. She'd be a phenomenal rugby player. I've got connections at Saracen's Ladies. I could probably get her a trial. I'll ask her.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you were ready to hear the wonderfully cultured tones of Miss Liv Bentley. Sadly, there has been... Well, I don't know, Arch, do you want to take it from here? Or?
Yeah, in the business world, these things happen, Freddie. Look, we had some pretty good chat with Benters, but unfortunately her lawyers have been onto my lawyers and she doesn't want it to be released. The deal was nearly done. You know, we'd had lunch at the Ned, a handshake had happened. We were walking out the door, you know, about to get on the Northern Line, have some banter, but just at the last moment, she decided it's not really for her. And although I was tempted to release it, you know, I'm already in a pretty hefty lawsuit with a netball girl that cannot be named. So, you know, look, for legal reasons, we'll be refraining from this interview. It's a shame. It's a shame. But if I'm being honest, you know, it's what I kind of expected. You know, if you do live in Fulham, you're that close to Putney, you know, your chat is going to be a little bit suspicious. Mm-hmm. But listen, great gal, wish her all the best. But luckily, we have got an excellent substitute.
Well, like all great businessmen, you always have something up your sleeve.
Yeah, yeah, I'm well connected. Everyone knows that. And, you know, I've managed to call in a late favour from Ed Jackson, Jacko, one of the most well-known guys in the rugby world, TV presenter on Channel 4, to step in. And I think you're going to enjoy this banter a lot.
Well, he's got an incredible story. You know,
it's also fitting, Fred, because, you know, we are releasing this Christmas single to raise money for Restart. And that's a charity that helped Ed massively. So it's going to be some seriously good C.H.A.T. chat.
Well,
let's get him in.
Today, we're incredibly thrilled and honoured to be joined by living, breathing superhero and Mr. Ed Jackson, a man who over the last 3.5 years has defied gravity, science and modern medicine to achieve goals that were simply impossible to even dream about when on a sunny afternoon back in April 2017, Ed accidentally dived into the shallow end of a friend's swimming pool and suffered a serious spinal injury, which left him paralysed from the neck down. Merely 12 months later, he was climbing Mount Snowdon, followed by climbing 10,000 feet at Mount Buet in the Alps, and then during lockdown, one of the most remarkable stories of modern times. While sleeping in a tent in his sitting room, he managed to scale Everest, becoming the first quadriplegic in history to do so. Ed Jackson, I doff my cap to you, sir, and say it's an honour and a privilege to have you on. Obviously, we will get...
That is impressive. That is impressive, but you should mention some of my credentials as well, Fred.
Archie, it's not the time, mate. You keep on trying
Last year, I was top salesman in my company. I defied a lot of people. They didn't think I had it in me to beat the year before, but I managed to do that. So,
Archie, stop making
two heroes come together on the Rick Biz.
Okay, fine. But obviously, we'll get to the sort of crazy last 3 years of your life shortly. But as history dictates, we must celebrate your public school origins and your wonderful rugby career. So if I can take you back to your Millfield days, where you were captain of the first 15, what are your greatest memories of your time there? And also, what other big names were at the school when you were there? Because I hear they're sort of, you know, a breeding ground for the sort of stars of the future, as it were.
Cool, lasting memories from Millfield. I spent most of my upper sixth, I didn't actually play any rugby because I was injured the whole time. So most of my memories was trying to avoid getting into trouble. But it's amazing. Yeah, it was amazing school. Obviously, when you go into boarding school as a third year at 13 years old, it's a bit of a different experience. You know, you're chucked in with all the 17, 18-year-olds and it's a steep learning curve. So that was interesting, boys boarding house. But then as you go through the years, find your feet a little bit, stand up for yourself. By the time I left, I was sort of ready to leave. I think when you're getting told what time to go to bed when you're 17 is quite tough. I'm sat here with the Millfield first team rugby coach, believe it or not, Mike Baxter. I believe you know him.
Bax, yeah. I've come across him a few times. Great guy. Great. He's in great shape. He's got some pretty good chat.
Ed, when you leave Millfield, you go straight to play for your hometown club of Bath.
Jacko, when you were at Bath, were you there with my really good friend, Benders?
Benders was there. I was also there with someone who else is sat next to me right now, Oliver Barkley.
Barks, yeah. He's a friend of the podcast and someone I was looking to go into property with. He hasn't returned my calls, but if he's there, just say, look, just can I double check his number?
Barks, why haven't you returned his calls, mate? Busy, apparently.
Busy, yeah.
He's a very
busy
man, old Barks.
No, I'm busy as well, tell him. But, I'll connect with him on LinkedIn. That's probably a better way for us to start the conversation. But definitely looking at getting into residential property in the Bath area. I know he's got a bit of a foothold there, and it's definitely an area I'd like to, go into. Maybe Bax can sort of back us as an investor.
Well, what do you reckon, lads?
Absolutely.
Ed, you obviously gained some great experience at Bath, but struggled to hold down a starting slot in that wonderfully gifted side of that era. Talking about that, did you ever have any sort of incredible night outs with, you just mentioned their Barks and Benders? What were the nights out like with those guys who were sort of your seniors at that time?
I'm not going to lie, it was a bit of a crazy time to enter the world of professional rugby. We had it's kind of the Wild West down in Bath those days. You had sort of Matt Stevens, Lippy, Justin Harrison.
Scaysbrook.
Sort of took Scays, exactly.
Took
me under their wing, and I kind of was a bit like, oh my God, is this what rugby's really like? This is awesome. Can't wait. Turned out that's not actually what rugby's like. Still had a lot of fun. Bath's a small place. I think Barks was banned from most of the places in Bath by the time I got there. So we had to do most of the drinking at his house. But yeah, it was a cool experience to be in my hometown, obviously being born there. However, after 2 or 3 years of not getting much rugby, as you said, and also being everyone knows everyone in Bath, I was ready to get out and sort of see the bright lights and move to Doncaster, actually. I was going to say London, but that happened a year later. So that was a little bit of a culture shock.
Where is Doncaster? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's in Yorkshire. It's I kind of turned up there and being sort of Southwest public school boy, all of a sudden it wasn't just the blokes that could beat me up, it was the women as well. So that was a bit of a culture shock. But I loved it up there. Great club, good bunch of lads. Played more rugby in that year than I had the previous three, so it was good.
It's funny you say that, because you obviously, as you just alluded there, you moved from the cobbled Roman streets of Queen's English-speaking Bath to a place they call Doncaster, or Donny, I believe the locals call it, in South Yorkshire. So for a man with a stunning accent who speaks the Queen's English and sort of a love for middle-class clothing, you know, you were donning a barber on the Heineken Cup show the other day. How was that whole experience for you?
It was a bit scary at first, but actually I'm first generation Southerner. So most of my family are from South Yorkshire, Sheffield way. My dad still tells me off for calling it Bath instead of Bath, because he says he hasn't got an R in it. So I had some allies up there, if you like, but same. There was the first big culture shock of my career. I did end up moving from Wasps to the Dragons, which was a similar sort of culture shock, but you kind of got to learn throughout my career, having been a bit of a journeyman, that it didn't really matter which club you went to or what sort of background there was. It was a similar makeup of players in every squad.
It kind of reminds me of a time I went to a mate's birthday in Hackney, and I wasn't used to the accent, the nightlife and the sort of culture, but look, I'm very adaptable and actually managed to get away that night with quite a nice girl who worked in PR. She actually was at the birthday, she was from Fulham, lucky enough, so we had a lot in common. So yeah, very similar, like, and I completely understand it. There were about 50 people at that party, I'd say different. There were about 5 good lads, 30 weirdos, and then the other people I just didn't talk to. Mainly because they looked dirty and they smelt like sort of a musty bookcase. I think they bought their clothes at a second-hand shop.
Yeah, Hackney's an interesting place. I used to live in Clapham, obviously, for a couple of years.
Whereabouts? Whereabouts? I know I'm CEO of Clapham, so I know it like the back of my hand.
I lived on the Northcote Road, opposite the Northcote
beautiful.
Club.
What a place to lash. What a place to lash. It's got something for everyone. It's a cultural hub. I don't know if you've been recently to Archer Street Wine Bar. They've got a silent disco there. It's seriously good banter.
Then your sort of big move came in a way when you went to play for the Mighty Wasps under Big Di Young. Like Surrey in cricket, Wasps are always full of huge personalities. So how was it fitting into such a boisterous team? And also, was this not during the time when we were struggling to sort of pay players and Di Young had to sort of pay for the bus himself, I read about in the papers. What was it like to be part of that pre the move to the Rico?
Yeah, it was great. Loved it. I mean, we trained down at Twyford, which it's not what you'd imagine a team like Wasps, not the kind of place you'd imagine they'd be training, but it's sort of more like a primary school sports ground, but it had a lot of character because of that. We had these little changing rooms, so there was like 5 different changing rooms, and it went in order of change room 18, which is where all the internationals were, and then it worked its way down. You sort of start in the bottom changing room and work your way up as your career goes through. But it was good fun. Obviously, Wasps were struggling at the time, which is probably why they signed me. But I managed to sign at the same time as a small number 8 called Nathan Hughes, and Haskin just re-signed. So again, I had a lot of weekends off, which was great.
Well, it's funny to say that, because sadly, you know, as you just said there, you were behind Nathan Hughes in the battle for the number 8 shirt. But then your old coach, Lynn Jones, came.
This is like, this is your life. It's incredible. The stats you've got on Jacko,
you've got to do your
quite
research.
Incredible.
And he gave you new lease of life.
We could put this format on ITV.
Well, mate, it'd be let's incredible. Do it. But he gave you a new lease of life at Newport Dragons, where once again you sort of must have stuck out with your impeccable middle-class clothing and tongue. What were those 2 years like down in the valleys?
Yeah, when I first moved down there, I was trying to sort of hide my accent, I suppose, because those boys, Dragons is the Gwent region, which is the valleys, which is sort of their bred to hate English people. They don't really know why, a lot of the youngsters, because it was kind of the generation before, but they just know that if they hear an English accent, they're supposed to hate you. So I was trying to do a Welsh accent for a while. And then, you know, after a few weeks, I suppose I was playing a lot more down there. And then you do, you know, once you start playing with the boys, it all comes together. And actually, a lot of those guys are sort of became my most loyal friends. I'm still in touch with quite a lot of them, and I absolutely loved it. Obviously moved to Cardiff, not Newport. Nothing against Newport, but I don't think I would have survived there, especially with an English accent. But everyone who plays for all the regions down in Wales seems to live in Cardiff. I lived in a little place called Pontcanna, and there was probably 30 rugby players on my street, which was quite bizarre, but also quite nice. Everyone sort of mixed teams, and obviously Cardiff's a lot of fun. So yeah, I absolutely loved it, to be honest. Even though we were losing every week, it was a lot of fun.
I've got a similar thing here in Clapham. A lot of the guys who play for the Clapham Falcons all live sort of in the same region. So it's just great. I mean, we've all, I would say majority of us, except one guy, but his dad's very wealthy, have all got quite high basic salaries. So we've been able to afford quite an exclusive area between the Common and Clapham South. Don't want to tell, you know, too many people my address. But yeah, so I completely get it. I mean, you probably had walkabout. We've got Inferno. So again, there's a lot of similarities there. You know, walkabout is like Inferno's, but just the girls are slightly looser. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've graced both establishments, and I'd say there's a lot of similarities, yeah.
Well, we've heard from a number of lads, including Priestland, Rhys Priestland, who's a friend of the show, that people get, you know, a bit like the North, a lot more loose in Wales. So what was the biggest night you can remember down there in Cardiff? I mean, are there such things as nightclubs? You've got the walkabout, but I mean, what happens post sort of midnight, and how loose does it get? Surely you've got all these Welsh ladies who are sort of buying for your barber jacket and your wonderful English.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been married for 11 years, so it wasn't so much about the ladies, but in terms of the night out, I remember there's this place called 10 Mill Lane, which is open till basically the last person leaves, until like at least 6 or 7 in the morning. So we ended up having a few big nights there. And I lived in a place called 112 Kings Road, which was my house number.
Oh, that's quite cool.
And they used to have
Kings
so
Road.
Many after parties that it started getting known as Bar 112 by the boys. And it got to the point where after about 6 months, there were people coming up to me who I didn't know, or just overhear conversations saying, have you heard of this Bar 112? Where is it? I heard there's after parties. People actually thought it was a bar. So we had to put an end to that quite quickly, because obviously I was living there with my wife as well, and so she needed to get some sleep because she had a real job. And but in terms of big nights out, I think probably one night that I don't really remember much of, but I knew was a big night, because I walked downstairs and I'd never met the bloke, but Andy Powell was asleep in my living room. And I think that's probably an indication of a big night, is when you wake up and you find Andy Powell in your living room.
That was incredible.
And he was like, all right, boy. Great night last night. I was like, oh God, this must have been big. But apparently we were best mates tonight, but I don't remember it.
We've tried to get him on the podcast, but he doesn't have a mobile phone. I think you have to write letters or send faxes. Don't think he'd be able to cut it in the city, put it that way.
He's a great guy.
And now some words from our commercial partner, AC Limited. Investing your money in the future so you don't have to worry.
At a time where things are most uncertain, we turn to the most certain thing there is, science. Science can overcome diseases, create cures, and yes, beat pandemics. It has done before, and it will again. Because when it faces a new opponent, it doesn't back down, it revs it up and finds what it's looking for. That's the power of science. Introducing to you the new vaccine from AC Limited. Give you great tan and also a bit of serotonin protein as well. Coming this Christmas.
Ed, I want to take you back to that day in April 2017. You've just finished lunch. The sun is shining. The pool is glistening. You have a weekend off from rugby. You're finally settled at a club. And then the moment that would change you into one of the most admired and courageous men ever to walk this earth occurs. Please, can you take
our
listeners...
Are you trying to date Jacko?
Well, he's been married for 11 years, so not anymore. Please, can you take us through what you remember of the day's events?
Yeah, well, I was injured from Dragons. I just signed another 2-year contract, so I was loving it, and I had the rest of the year off until the summer, just enjoying myself, trying to get in good nick for Ibiza probably rather than next season. But I went to a family friend's barbecue, first hot day of the year. Walked down to the pool, took my shirt off, and it was like a feature pool with a waterfall in one end. And I just dived in where the waterfall hit the water and thinking it was deep, but it wasn't. Smacked my head in the bottom, and next thing I know, I'm staring at the surface, unable to move. So pretty scary. Luckily, my dad was there and one of my mates, they pulled me to the surface, and I dislocated the bottom of my neck. Part of the bone had splintered off and gone through my spinal cord. So I was paralyzed from the shoulders down. Ambulance came. I actually ended up, I thought it was a 15 minutes journey to hospital, actually took 2.5 hours because I was resuscitated 3 times, which I didn't find out no one had courage to tell me until about a year after my accident. So I was very lucky. I'm very lucky to still be here, but I couldn't move or feel anything for about a week in hospital. I was told I wasn't going to walk again, and it was all looking a bit bleak, but then sort of slowly but surely I'd started with a toe wiggle, and slowly but surely things started coming back to me. Had some amazing support and a lot of things to get better for. So and after three and a half months in hospital, I left still in a wheelchair, moved back in with my parents, and one thing led to another, and managed to start walking a bit after 6 months. 9 months, managed to kind of spend more of my time on my feet than in my wheelchair. And then wanted to set myself a challenge on the 1 year mark to basically send a message to all the other people in hospital who had been given a sort of guarded or negative prognosis like I had, that maybe that didn't have to be the case. So I decided I wanted to try and climb snow in the 1 year mark, and managed to do it. Had loads of people come out and support. It was an amazing day, and kind of haven't stopped climbing up hills since, really.
Also, you know, you were just saying that you were resuscitated 3 times, which is just, you know, beyond sort of incredible to even think about. But then you were rushed into 7 hours of surgery. And is it true that you read your last rites at some time sort of during that day?
Yeah, that probably makes it sound a bit worse than it is. When you go under anaesthetic, if anyone's had an operation before, they will say to you the different outcomes. And one of them is you won't wake up, because some people, 1 in a million or whatever, are allergic to anaesthetic. But I think when the surgeons, it was my 7th operation, and he said to me, you know, that there's a chance this won't improve. There's a chance it will. There's also a chance you won't wake up from this operation. It wasn't just because of the anaesthetic. So it's the first time I've kind of listened and believed him when he said it. So that was a bit of a scary moment. I was still in shock, I think, because apparently when I went back to see him in about 3 or 4 months later, he said that he'd never been told before. I just said, oh, well, just do your best. He said that was quite interesting, or quite amusing thing. He's had a little chuckle under his mask considering the situation we were in. But I suppose when all that sort of stuff's going on, you're still in shock because you don't really know what to think.
And how quickly did Restart Rugby contact you post your injury? And can you let us into the incredible work they did for you in supporting you, in particular over the years, to aid your recovery, both sort of physically and mentally from this incredible incident?
Yeah, Restart have been incredible. They got in contact after about 10 days, 2 weeks. They knew about it straight away, obviously, but I think everyone was just giving space because they didn't know the outcome and want to respect the family. But they basically got in contact, and there wasn't anything they could do until I left hospital, because you can't get out private physios in because of insurance purposes. So I was just under the NHS care. But they just said, look, when you get out, we'll make sure that you get the best care you need, all the care you need. And obviously that lifted a massive mental weight off me, because I was thinking, you know, how am I going to afford this? Am I going to have to sell my house? Is my wife going to have to leave her job? All of these sorts of things. So it alleviated all that stress and allowed me to just sort of focus on trying to get better. So that made a massive difference. And then when I left hospital, they funded my rehab for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, which was incredible and meant that I could get back to a point where, yeah, I'm hobbling around, but the main thing is I'm independent, and they've been a huge part of that, and they do an amazing amount of work. I'm on the board of trustees for them now, So I see all of the work they do in the Premiership still, and supporting players, mostly in the, most of the stuff's in the mental health space, but they're a great charity, and they, yeah, made a huge difference for me.
Ed, you then crazily, whilst sort of barely able to move, decided to set yourself this incredible challenge of climbing the largest mountain in Wales, Mount Snowdon, merely 12 months after the injury prevailed, in order to raise funds for Reset Rugby, inspiring all those who delivered sort of worst case scenarios every year to prove that, you know, these aren't sort of unchangeable and you can do something with it. Can you just take us through how tough that challenge was? And also, if that mammoth challenge wasn't enough for this incredible man you are, you decided to set a 10,000 foot peak in the Alps as your next challenge with some other ex-rugby players involved.
Yeah, I think, well, the main reasons for climbing it, well, there were three reasons for climbing it. One, to set myself a challenge, because I was doing all of this rehab sort of every day, hours and hours of the boring stuff, you know, not the fun weights. It was all of the boring sort of prehabby type exercises to try and get better. And I needed to set myself a goal to sort of train towards, because it's not like you've got another game or a season to aim for, to get back fit for. There was nothing. So that was one of the reasons. Obviously, also said from the start, I wanted to pay back Restart sort of every penny that they gave me. So it was the beginning of that sort of fundraising process. And as you said, try and inspire other people. But I kind of just put it out there because I'd only walked about a mile at the 9 month mark, 10 month mark probably, and I needed to be able to walk 9 miles to get to the top of Snowdon and back. So it was a serious unknown, and I opened it up to anyone who wanted to join in, expecting a couple of people maybe to come along, family and friends, but 70 people turned up at the start line. So it ended up being this amazing weekend. Cool. It was absolutely brutal, but I think achieving it made me realize that I could do things. I could do, even from, like, even though I'd been positive the whole time, I probably didn't realize I was capable of doing that at that point. And that sort of gave me a kick up the ass and gave me some drive and a bit of purpose again, because one of the hardest things when I was in hospital was going from someone who was independent, you know, young bloke, you know, professional sportsman or whatever, to someone who couldn't even go to the toilet for themselves or brush their own teeth. And it just felt like a burden on everyone. And then when I started the blog, and people after a few weeks, a few months, people started getting in contact and saying, by me sharing my story, it was helping them. And then thinking, and that gave me a sense of purpose again. I thought there could be some good that comes out of my accident. It doesn't all have to be bad. So that was partly why I climbed Snowdon, and then I realized more good was coming from it. And then it just became this addictive thing and I kind of decided that if enough good could come from this accident, then there'll be a tipping point where it's no longer a bad thing that it happened. Yeah. It's a good thing. And that was partly why I climbed Snowdon. And then I realized the knock-on effect it was having for myself, but also for other people. And yeah, as you said, carried on. Restart just happened to be going to the Alps anyway for their Alpine Challenge. So I managed to persuade them to let me join in and drag my carcass up Mont Buet. And again, that was savage. But then I started appreciating the real sort of health benefits, but mental health benefits, really, of being outside and challenging yourself. And yeah.
I definitely find when I do CrossFit outside with my CrossFit team, the Chassis Monsters, there is a different kind of high than doing it in the actual gym. So I definitely understand what you're saying there. My question to you, Ed, so obviously we got you on here because you're an inspirational figure. You've taken on an adversity, and as you know, we are attempting to get the Christmas number one. We're going to be against some big guns, you know, well-known musicians, but they won't have the chat that we've got. What advice would you give us in this monumental task that we've set ourselves? Any advice you'd give me? I mean, I'm pretty sure we'd do it, but if you've got any advice, what would it be?
I think just be confident, be ruthless. Tick. And if you're an underdog, don't be afraid to use underhand tactics. I think, like, trolling them probably on yeah. Twitter and Instagram yeah, yeah. is probably a good idea. Try and defame their names and just take away your competition.
Yeah, okay, perfect. Write that down, Freddie, because I'll get on tomorrow and start messaging Little Mix.
I will.
Some horrible messages.
Ed, obviously you got married. You're saying you've been married for 11 years, but the video and your incredible story alluded to the fact that you got married a couple of years ago.
I haven't been married. It feels like we've been married for 11 years, but it's actually only been two. I've been with Lois for 11 years. Yeah.
Okay. You got married to your stunning wife and partied the evening away in your swimming trunks due to sort of a temperature control problem with your body post the injury, which makes the next achievement even more remarkable. Whilst over lockdown, you set up a tent in your parents' sitting room, sort of set the aircon to below freezing, and pumped it up. And then over 4 days, you climbed your parents' staircase thousands of times to reach the virtual peak of Everest. What led you to push yourself to do this challenge? I mean, obviously, you'd done Snowdonia, you'd done the Alps, but then what took you on to be sort of essentially the first person ever to achieve such an incredible feat?
mostly boredom, probably, because we were all in lockdown. But actually, it was probably watching Captain Tom, what he was doing. And I just thought, you know, let's do something to try and help out the charities. I actually did it to raise money for three charities: Wings for Life, who are a spinal cord injury charity that I'm involved with, our local hospital, NHS hospital, and a charity that's helping build a spinal unit in a pool. So I just thought that I always talk about thinking outside the box, and you know, when obstacles get thrown your way, there's always a way around it or through it. Just keep your head up and keep positive. And I thought I had to put my money where my mouth is instead of just trying to wait out what was going on. Try and come up with something. Obviously, Captain Tom was doing the walking. He had that lockdown, so I thought I'd try and climb something. Luckily, my parents lived next door, because when after hospital, I moved in with them because I still needed looking after. So we moved into a cottage next door. So I was able to go around to their house, use their staircase, which made a big difference. He had two handrails. Also, I didn't want to ruin my own staircase. And I actually was going to climb the height of Snowdon because that seemed pretty symbolic. My left leg doesn't really work, so I had to do it all with one leg, and I thought that'd be more sensible than going too big. But after sort of an hour mulling it over, and the way my brain works, I suppose I was mounting a full-scale expedition on stairs, which was going to take 4 days, or did take 4 days, and I thought it'd be quite fun to do it in an expedition style camp at the bottom, which my parents, first of all, didn't mind, and then I think after a day or two of stepping over guide ropes and tripping over mountaineering boots, we weren't too happy I was there. But I was into it then, and I'd made it public, and we were raising some decent money by that point, so they had to let me finish.
Did you get Box to play some music to inspire you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I had a few DJs come on and play some music, which was quite a lot of fun. Hass came on and played some music as well. Charlie Davis. We had quite a lot of fun with it. I think one of the main things for me was, especially during that point, there was so much negativity going about. Obviously, there was COVID going on, but the news in the morning and the evening was just about the death toll. And, you know, and obviously it's serious, but everyone was just focusing on that and feeling down about themselves and about life. And so we did an Instagram live slot over the morning news and the evening news, and just had a laugh with it and had a bit of fun. And the best thing was when you had people like Hask on Instagram live, you could see the comments from his followers who were like, from "I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here," tuning in, and they were like, "What the hell is going on?" Like, Hass DJing and some bloke is walking up and down the stairs in mountaineering kit. It must have been pretty weird to tune into. So some of the comments were quite funny. But
I think I requested to come on because obviously I'm probably the biggest influencer in Clapham, but there must have been like a technical glitch. Because I thought, you know, I could come on there and inspire you. I could have read, you know, some poetry. I could have got my decks out and played some sort of Infernos-esque music. If next time you do it, let me know.
I will. I must have missed that. My the wife was in charge of who she was letting on. So next time for sure.
I haven't got the blue tick yet, so that's probably why.
So now that you've spent 3 months in intense rehab, 9 months in a wheelchair, experienced being paralyzed from the neck down, been resuscitated 3 times from the edge of death via cardiac arrest, and managed to come through the other side, and in fact turn into a stronger human being, firstly, do you now fear anything? And secondly, my sort of final question to you is, do you ever look back and feel that this whole experience in some way was a destined outcome, as you were always meant to be superhuman and inspire people to sort of not give up, keep fighting and achieve anything they want to, no matter what the obstacles? You could have gone through being a wonderful rugby player, but now you've touched the lives of hundreds of thousands of people in a way which was never possible before.
Wow, that's that's big chat. But I think, look, I think I don't believe in destiny. I think shit happens. I think challenges get chucked at all of us. Good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people, but you can't affect what happens to you. All you can do is affect how you react. And yeah, I still get I still get scared of things and I still get upset and angry and like anyone, but I think I'm in a position now to maybe rationalize it a bit quicker. I appreciate the things in life that probably I took for granted before, like my family and my friends, and just being happy rather than trying to be whatever people think success is. You know, I think for me, it's being able to spend quality time with the people I love and being able to help other people. So in that sense, I found a more important purpose than I had before. I was happy before, but I didn't really know where I was going. And I think now I realize that there was more to life than what I was driving towards. So it's given me a gift in that respect. At the same time, it's not easy living with a spinal cord injury. I still have a lot of issues, day-to-day problems to deal with, sort of bladder and bowel issues and temperature regulation, spasms, like sleep and things like that. But once you get some perspective, you know, and you realize and you spend time with people who are way, way worse off than you and in a much more difficult position, and you start to feel grateful for the fact that you can just walk down the stairs, drive a car, have food on the table, have good friends, you know, life becomes a much more positive place to be. So I suppose that's where I'm at. I'm just rolling with the punches at the moment. I don't know where life's going to take me, but just saying yes to things, putting my best foot forward and enjoying myself.
Mate, it's, honestly, you are incredible. I mean, he's
married, Freddie. Jacko, my final question is, I'm just wondering, do you have the contact number to the person at Channel 4 Rugby? I've been trying to get them in contact with them just to come on and maybe co-present with you. Don't know, just add something, some spice to the rugby on Channel 4.
Mate, I do. And I think that's actually not a bad idea, because we do this show, The Big Tackle, which obviously will be starting next week, which has a bit of banter about it on a Saturday morning. And I think you'd be a great addition. So yeah. I'll get in touch with him. Maybe I'll get him to call you though.
Yeah, do. I mean, one thing about me, which a lot of people say on my Instagram, is I'm a man of the people. I think a lot of people, even up north, which I would not want to go to, I think they'd really enjoy me. And I think actually, you know, ask Barks, we've never had a night out, but I'm sure he'd probably enjoy coming on a night out with me.
I think he said he has had a night out with you. Have you, Barks?
We tried to get into the Neb once, but they wouldn't let him in.
I tried to get into Neb once, but they wouldn't let you in, apparently.
Yeah. No, that was, to be fair, that was a thirsty Thursday, and I was absolutely steamboated. But yeah, no, Barks, if you're there, please do connect with me on LinkedIn, mate. I really want to talk about this residential property. And Bax, I hope you're all good, mate.
Ed, thank you so much for coming on, mate. You're incredibly inspirational, and obviously, just like, thanks so much for giving your time.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, lads. Speak to you soon.
What an absolute legend. I mean, that guy is heroic in everything,
mate,
he's done, the challenges he's faced.
He's rugby through and through. He's a top, top bloke, and looking forward to having a night out with him, Baxter and Barks. Probably do it in Bath, actually. Just get out of London after silly season. I imagine in the new year, us boys will probably play a four ball and then probably just hit a number of the high-end bars in Bath and just have some fucking good chanter.
So, Archie, obviously, we're delighted to be back with the business section sponsored by Suns.
If you want a lid like mine, then can I suggest going to Suns and getting yourself sorted? You know, no one wants to see a terrible lid. It's shocking.
Yeah, I mean, here's a little quick checklist.
It's like someone wearing brown shoes.
Yeah, here's a checklist I put together. Are you sat there listening to this podcast now, and do you either have thinning hair, are you bald on top, or are you pranged out that you may be losing hair? If you're one of those...
Majority, stats say there are quite a lot of them out
there.
Yeah,
there are. And if you're one of those three...
And also quite a lot of overweight, like sort of wobbly chassis listening to this.
Yeah, no, I agree. If you're one of those three people...
Ideally, you'd be listening to this pod while running.
Yes.
That should be one of the rules we state. You know, this pod is for only people exercising.
But if you're worried about your hair loss and you don't want to fly to Turkey and get some horrible botched surgery or spend hundreds of thousands like Jamie Lang did and regret it here and sort of mess it up and have to do it all over again, there's an easy, easy solution. It's brought to you by Suns because they're geniuses. It's a non-invasive treatment. And guess what? We're giving you 25 quid off this month. £25 off a 3-month package. So all you have to do is go to suns.co.uk, have a quick consultation with the doctor. He'll tell you what you need. So guys, there's £25 off a 3-month package just for the last week of November. So get on it now before time runs out with the code RIGBIZ25 at suns.co.uk.
God, we've been doing this advert for so long. If people aren't doing it, then what's the point,
Fred? They've only got themselves to blame. So, Archie, talking business.
Freddy.
Next week,
yes,
the country
my
opens up.
My favourite part of this podcast, the business section.
The country opens up once more.
Yes.
And with that, opportunities are plenty.
Yes.
So what would be your number one bit of advice? Obviously, you've been giving great advice all season. Well, I say great advice. You know, people have lost quite a lot of money in Biltong because it's not selling as well as you forecast it would. But we won't touch on that. What's your number one bit of advice for next week when the pubs and the world reopens?
Thanks for asking me, Freddie. But obviously, everyone knows this week AC Limited are bringing out a vaccine, granted, and there'll be more details on that next week. But one thing I've been looking at, and I'm going to be bringing out a line of, is waterproofs. It's definitely an area to invest in because we're going to go back to outside lash. The weather will be getting colder, and one thing you don't want to have when you're on outside lash is getting wet. Because wet and cold equals probably having to go home and getting the sniffles.
Mm.
And you really don't want that. So, yeah, I would definitely be telling people now in the business world and not in the business world to invest in a good waterproof. I would highly recommend Raab jackets. They are superb. Not only do they look great when you're outside lashing, but also it is a really good entrance piece when you're walking into a pub. You know, with Raab on your jacket, it does say you're so money.
Guys, thank you so much for listening.
Controversial
to
podcast, mate. Controversial.
Wow. Very, very controversial. It's a shame.
I reckon there'll be a Netflix documentary about that podcast.
Mate, I reckon so too. It's a shame that we couldn't bring you Liv, but you know, sometimes these things go that way. But I hope you enjoyed Mr. Jackson because he's got an incredible story. And hopefully that's inspired you because, what, is it next week, isn't it, sir? Early next week, you'll be able to buy the single to support Restart Rugby and try and get us our Christmas number one.
Also, to mention, pretty exciting guest next week.
Go on.
First ever Kev Ball player on the podcast. Andy King, the guy who won the Premiership with Leicester.
You're not
City.
Talking about the guy, well, the only guy in history who's won League One Championship and the Prem.
Yeah, yeah. I pulled him in. I reeled him in. Brought in another deal for the podcast. He's got some seriously good chat. Knows a lot about, you know, Clapham, the Sun, and generally good nightlife in London. So looking forward to doing a bit of business with him. But look, mate, that was a strong podcast.
So you're saying Leicester...
Don't be disheartened, Freddie. Okay?
I'm not.
Happened.
Yeah, yeah. But you're saying Leicester's highest scoring midfielder of all time is going to be on the podcast.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Don't you worry.
That is crazy. Yeah, Premier League winner, Champions League player.
Yeah, don't you worry. When you're with AC, you know, things will happen. That's why they call me the magician, mate. I said it time and time again. I make things happen on and off the pitch.
Mate, that is incredible. Well, guys, don't forget that you
Well played, guys. Tough match. I'd say that was a draw.
Probably a draw.
It's our first draw of the season, but yeah, we'll get back to winning ways next year. The performance was there. The heart was there. But probably just need to work on the performance a little bit. But look, that's what happens. You get a bit complacent.
We've got to get better lawyers.
Well, you get complacent.
We've got to get better lawyers. That's what we need.
Yeah. Well, I need to, yeah. If I hadn't pumped so much money into this Restart Rugby track, then I probably would have enough lawyers to tackle Bentley's lawyers, but I don't.
No, it's fair
play. But wish all
the
best.
We've lost a legal battle.
Great girl.
Yeah, great girl. We sadly lost a legal battle. But
looking forward to next week, guys. Don't forget to buy the track. And also, please do add some banter to the comments on the podcast. It means a lot. And I do read them. And there's some really good chat on them.
There really is. And guys, don't forget that you can get those incredible Rex Club jerseys, all their wonderful Clapham Falcon caps below. Also, what better than this? The last couple of days of lockdown, secure that Suns deal and sort out your horrible lids. RIGBIZ 25 will get you £25 off the Suns. Until next week, when we're joined by a Premier League champion, our first praise into football, Mr. Andy King. It's goodbye from me.
And it's love and champagne from me.